Mayor Commissioner Michelle was still, can Mayor still just lead at the same crew?
True.
But you, doesn't sound like you would have been on the floor too often.
Oh, no. No. Even after negotiations, you know, at, in 1951, that year on the committee, good Lord, you know, there were so many things that had to be wrapped up. And I had the assignment of reviewing and proofreading all agreements, including the whole contract. Had to read it from page one, you know, to be sure that, you know, punctuation is so important in negotiations and that the intent was there and a whole enchilada, so the whole thing. And I had the most charming man that I worked with, who has since passed away. We had a lot of mutual respect for one another, you know, and it was a rough job, mm-hmm. a long, laborious job. And we had to proofread all of the supplements, too, to it. So it was a, gosh, I was in that thing a long time after it was signed. Months, you know. Then after that, so as long as I was assigned to that, you see, I wouldn't have to serve on the bargaining committee for the grievances. So you have an alternate come in and take my place. Then after I wrapped up everything in negotiations, all the contracts and everything, then I went back to my regular job as a committeeman.
And then still not spending much time on the shop.
Oh, no.
In terms of your work.
No.
By that point, that was, in effect, almost the end of your real shop work.
Oh, yes.
Wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Way up until, like, about 1960. Let's see, what year? I don't know, probably 1962, something like that.
Then you went back to the shop?
No, I ran for recording secretary. And then I ran for recording secretary, and I couldn't serve as recording secretary and bargaining committee because the recording secretary was almost a full-time job. I had to be out of the shop 3 days a week and all that sort of thing. Then I'd come back in the shop, and, you know, and I would, then I would be a lead for a couple of days, you know, and then I'd go back out. But I still had to, have a full-time lead there to cover my job.
Now, right around this time is when your daughter was in high school and was beginning to see this young man. How were you juggling all of this activity and your home life
really
and
something.
Problems with the daughter?
Well, you know, if it hadn't been that my daughter really approved and understood, because after all, you know, she and I were so close all the years I was working and coming up in the union activity, she realized how important it was and the gains that we'd made. And she, you know, realized the benefits from vacation pay, sick leave pay, all the years kept improving because she was a beneficiary, you know. So it was just really great. The one thing I really felt badly about was when she was a senior in high school in 1954, this fantastic thing was offered to me through Walter Reuther. It was a workshop in Scandinavian countries. And it happened right during her graduation time from high school. And I was really, and not only that, but my father was quite ill. And I couldn't decide whether I was going to go or not. As soon as I knew my dad was all right and out of danger, then I had to make up decide whether, after all these years raising this child, not to be here for graduation would be just traumatic, you know. So she says, no, Mom, I think it's a marvelous thing to do, and I think you should do it. And I had her blessing. But then my family, I had sisters, I had two sisters here and a brother. And his family. So they said that they would rally forth for the graduation and all that sort of thing, you know. So I did go to this workshop, and it was just fantastic. I'm so glad that I was able to partake in it. You know, it was just fantastic. It was the Scandinavian workshop of Sweden, Denmark, and Norway, and then there was England also. All the major cities in England. And it was a fantastic experience.
Well, it was
really
was international labor.
Yeah. It was international UAW-CIO at that time, and it was it's called the Third CIO Scandinavian Labor Education Workshop. But this was one of Walter Reuther's babies, and they had these workshops set up in England. There was an old castle that was converted to a labor workshop, and up in. In Norway, Goring's Hideaway up there, you know, his old hideaway per se was turned into a college, and it was we met with these different labor unions and would you know, and compare our methods of negotiating, and would tour their factories, and
how many people would attend
this? Well, let's see, I can count real quick this year's. 24, and they're from all over the United States and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And Canada. And it was just a...
Were there other women there?
Yes, there were.
Tell me about...
Oh, I tell you, there was one gal. Her name was Annette Fabrizio, and she was from New Jersey. She was from the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America.
Mm-hmm.
She was a double needle operator. And a very, very interesting gal. But the one that I was really fascinated with was she was from the South. And she was a little 5x5, little black gal. And president of her local. Tried to find her name on here. I should never have forgotten it. But she was a brilliant woman.
What was this UAW local or another industry?
UAW-CIO.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
UAW-CIO. But I think she also was from the Clothing Workers Union, too. I'm trying to find her name here, too.
So this was people from labor organizations, not necessarily only UAW.
No, that's right.
Uh-huh.
That's right. No, see, like Annette, you see, was from the Amalgamated Clothing Workers. And then we had a fellow from the International Union of Electrical Radio Machine Workers.
Mm-hmm.
And United Steel Workers,
mm.
And Paper Workers, United Paper Workers, and United Rubber, Cork, Linoleum, Plastic Workers, and let me see here. Well, looking at more steel workers here, Amalgamated Clothing, National Brewery Workers Union, United Rubber, Cork, Linoleum. That's about it.
Yeah. How long was this conference or workshop?
See, it was 6 weeks, I believe. And then the night when I was quite honored because I was the chairman of my group. There were three different groups, and I was the chairman of my group. And
how were the groups divided?
They were divided according to territory.
Mm.
Territory, you know. And I was. There were three of us selected to after on return. To the United States to meet there in New York City and to be interviewed by Walter Cronkite, you know, as to what we conditions we found over there and how they compared, you know, with our conditions here in the United States as far as bargaining and politics and the whole thing. And then our Department of Education made a kinescope of that and used it for educational purposes in the United States. And so it was quite an honor.
Were there any other UAW women?
No.
Women?
No, I was the only UAW woman.
But were there other UAW
yes.
members?
Yes, there were other UAW men.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And this seems like you would certainly have been in favor with the leadership then at that point.
Oh, yes, very definitely. Mm-hmm. In fact, this was like this was a fringe benefit. No, I'm going to use it like that. An award, you might say, is mm-hmm. something, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Because for my participation, the local and the whole
mm-hmm.
shot and all that sort of thing. I was selected. I didn't seek it out. I was mm-hmm. so surprised.
So the international invited...
Oh, yes. They made the selection.
Mm-hmm.
The international selected these people.
Was
you bet.
Was there any conflict within your local over your selection?
No. There might have been that I didn't know of. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they were all very proud and pleased, so I gathered.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there was a big write-up in the Long Beach paper, how to select the Walter Reuther and the pictures and all that kind of stuff. And it was quite a big to-do about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was a very expensive trip.
Now, did you meet... when
part of my trip was paid by UNESCO.
Oh, I see.
The extension. I was only supposed to go to the Scandinavian countries,
mm-hmm.
but they selected certain people, you know, the group, that, group leaders, I guess. And UNESCO paid our airfare, our housing and everything, food and everything, in England.
Did you meet with women from the other countries?
Oh, yes.
Or was it all men?
No, we met with women, too. In England, I know there was a member of the House of Parliament there that she was a little Scotsman, just a darling, a little red-headed, just fiery, you know. And we had dinner there, and right there, and you know, right below Big Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the first week that their meat rationing had been lifted. And they served us their famous roast beef and Yorkshire pudding, you know. And in this huge room, it was just so impressive. It was just fantastic. You could hear Big Ben just ring, you know. But anyway, I did meet with some of the females who were members of Parliament there. And I was terribly upset because at that time, I don't remember the total number of members of Parliament, but there were 33. I remember that sticks in my mind. 33 members who were communist members of the Communist Party who were seated representatives there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't get over that.
Mm.
You know, I know it wasn't, you know, a socialistic country, but, oh, my gosh, we worked so hard to get three main ones out of the Long Beach plant, you know, the leaders out. And my God, here they are sitting as member of parliament over here, their government, you know, voting. Okay, I couldn't get over that.
Now, tell me, in terms of your family life, by this time your daughter had already announced to you, hadn't she, that she wanted
to be married, yes, definitely.
Now, how did you feel about that?
About that? Well, I was a little disappointed because, you know, we'd come a long ways together, and I thought, doggone it, now I wanted her to have a college education. I wanted her to have things that I wasn't able to have. And I was in a position then to give it to her, you know, and I'd married, and we had this money, all that sort of thing, and had a nice home for him. And so I just, I was disappointed. And I told her, I said, well, you know, first when she first told me, she was just 17. And I said, well, honey, I said, when she first told me she was a senior, she hadn't even graduated yet. She wanted to get married. No way, you've got to graduate from high school. That's all there is to it. And then after she graduated, she wasn't quite 18 yet. And I said, oh, well, you have to wait till 18, honey. That's all there is to it, you know. And then, are you sure you want to go to college? Well, after she was sure, she was sure, she was sure, what else could I do? Mm-hmm. Then, of all things, she wanted to be married back in Montana. She didn't want to be married here in California, even. That kind of broke my heart, because I wanted to have a wedding and all that. So, you know, I thought, well, I don't know. I just hope I'm doing the right thing, you know. And so I flew back there with her, and we had a wedding back there in Montana. And I did like the young man. He was a good, clean-cut young man. He came from a good family, and, you know, and he was, I just couldn't say no to anymore or anything. That's all there was to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was very disappointed.
Mm. Now, how did this affect your own home life then? Because that was quite a change after all these years of investing so much.
Yeah, but I had just been married. I had just remarried.
We skipped that. Tell me about that marriage.
I was in 1953.
Oh, okay. Now, who was that?
Well, I married management into management.
Uh-huh.
Even though I was still active in the union. And I'll tell you, it was really, really, really something. I started going with him, was it 52? I guess it was 52, 53. I'm trying to think of what year. 52, I think. In 1952, it used to be the custom in the plant, you know, Christmas time, boy, everybody would bring in bottles and everything, and maybe, you know, even though you start at 7 o'clock, maybe like around 9 o'clock, half the plant would be just loaded, you know, and it would be dangerous to walk through. In the machine shop, you have to shut the machines down. And the company put up with it for quite a long time. Well, heck, I took part in it, too, and I know at Christmas time, heck, I didn't drink a lot. I never drank heavily or never did ever, you know, but I'd have a drink with them and sit down and talk with the gang, you know, come on, Red, over here, and say, okay, and have a drink with them. Anyway, my Lord, I didn't get out of that plant that day till that night till after 9 o'clock, because we'd go to the different buildings, you know, and you know, I knew a lot of the people, knew a lot of the management, and they were very nice and were just great, not no hanky-panky, just mm-hmm. were great. Oh, a lot of them were, oh my gosh, the guys and gals were making love there under a tail cone and stuff like this. Way out of hand. Anyhow, I felt, gosh darn it, you know, after all the hell-raising, I'm not going to do this on New Year's. And New Year's, we had several people who had birthdays between Christmas and New Year's. I took up a collection, a little group over there, and we all chipped in to buy some birthday cakes. But the guys, they were bound determined they were going to get drunk. So five or six of us all went out. And, you know, all went out of the plant at noontime to get cakes. Well, we went out to get cakes, and I did. I got cakes and had them put in the box for me. But the guys got booze, you know, and they'd stick it in their pockets. And one guy had a peacoat. Manny had that thing loaded, you know, but all buttoned up. And we're coming under the tunnel under Lakewood there. He was still in use then. Coming up, just almost up to the ramp. And one of the fellows, the bottle slipped his pint down his leg and broke. And right, we're almost here where the cop's right there at the gate, you know, the poor cop, you know. So the guy takes the other bottle out and he says, "Buddy, put it under your cakes, you know." So he put it under the cakes. What can I say? So here I'm walking up there, and then naturally the plant protection officer is going to have to check the box after there's a crash. They found the stupid bottle in there. Well, it wasn't mine, but, you know. And it happened to be the president of the union, too, that put that dumb thing under there, so... They said, aha, you know, we have to issue a reprimand. I said, what for? That's not my bottle. And whose is it? I don't know, but it's not mine, you know, and I don't know where it came from, you know. So I was the only person in that whole plant that received a reprimand on New Year's Eve for not intoxication, but, you know, liquor on the premises, okay? So I filed a grievance. Ed Skearing had to give me the reprimand because he was my immediate supervisor. Well, we won the grievance, of course, because, God, the supervision was loaded and everything else over there in plants. How in the world could they, you know? And I framed my reprimand and put black ribbon around it and put it up in the toolbox. And his wife had died, you know, and so he was single and I was single. So just kidding about, oh, it was, hey, Red, you know, I see you won the grievance. Yes, I sure did. And, oh, well, you know, and we got to talking, we started going together.
Yeah, and he was...
He was supervisor, huh?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he was well highly thought of, and everything, as strict as the devil, but and a strictly a company man, but uh-huh. highly thought of. So I started going with him, and I finally had a lot of things I really liked about him. He's a perfectionist, and he was very neat and clean about himself, you know, and it was just a, you know, a real nice guy. And so we started going together and became engaged, and boy, everybody thought that was really neat, although the company told him that they didn't think it was going to work out. But he hung in there, and I'm telling you, I was going to have a simple wedding. What it ended up with, the wedding was so large, we had the largest church in Long Beach, which only held 500. But then we had to rent the Lafayette Ballroom, you know, which a couple thousand people at the top side, the two bars and everything else up there. And I started out with just, you know, a flower girl and so forth, ended up with 33 hostesses, and they were all gowned. I got the picture, I'm going to show you how fantastic it was. And, you know, it's just a huge, big wedding. And a lot of people thought, well, heck, that's going to work out just fine, even though Betty was an officer in the union, and Ed was in management, you know, and he was the head of the B-17 project during the war. So he'd been with the company since they had the little garage, you know, way back in Donald Douglas's days, in the old garage. He started way back then with Donald Douglas, so he'd had a fantastic background with Douglas. But we were
up to this point, your social life was almost toddler
right,
in the union.
That's right, and Civil Air Patrol.
Uh-huh.
That's another thing that I went to, a Civil Air Patrol, you know, I had one of the girls that worked here at Douglas, she belonged to Civil Air Patrol, and of course I was naturally interested in planes. I always wanted to learn to fly, too. So I became an officer in the Civil Air Patrol, and I was learning to fly. I was having a ball with the young kids, you know. In between, that was the only other thing I did beside my union activity, the Civil Air Patrol and union activity.
Mm.
But then I started going with Ed, and our first date was, I think, it was a Halloween party, you know. Civil Air Patrol Halloween party is what it was.
Oh.
And some of the other Douglas people were going, so he went along, too. And we were engaged in about 6 months, and then we were married a few months later.
In
53. Then, of course, Mary Beth got married, and then about six months after we were married, all of a sudden, I noticed that there was a resentment, you know, in my activities. Although he was active in the management club, too. He was active in the management club. But the resentment was, I think it was a little bit of jealousy there, and I just really did. And then I found that, unfortunately, you know, he was like a Jekyll and Hyde. You know, it was just very bad. Being just in top management, you know, I had, you know, we used to entertain, and he never did much of that before, but that's what you just got to do when you're in that level.
Mm-hmm.
And people used to love to come over and everything, but they'd never invite us back. And I always thought that was kind of strange, you know. And people be there, and we'd be having a good time. The minute they'd leave, he'd start talking about how this person drank too much and how this person... He just was a complete Jekyll and Hyde person. They became extremely possessive. And I took some terrible beatings, you know. And 6 months after we married, it was that bad. Really, I was sick about it. I was so determined it was going to work. You know, I just wanted it to work very badly. And finally, I thought that I got down about 120 pounds. You can imagine me. I was just skin and bones. I was just an absolute nervous wreck, you know, trying to hide it from the people and my family and everything. Finally, I asked him if he wouldn't do it. I got so bad, I was under a doctor's care and everything. He said, well, I think you better try to see if you can get a marriage counselor. So he agreed to that.
Mm-hmm.
And it did help for a while. And then it slipped back into his old things again. So it must have been after 4 years I finally filed for divorce. But I went through 3.5 years of not very happy life, you know, really. Tried everything. I even gave up my union activity.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did. I gave up my union activity, and I said, look, let's do something together here now. If you know, let's just forget about the management club, and I'll, at my end of my term, I will no longer run for office, and let's try to get together here. And we bought a boat, beautiful Owens Cruiser, because I love the ocean, and he liked to fish and everything. Mm-hmm. But gosh, after we bought the darn boat, you know, beautiful, gorgeous boat, he didn't want to take it out. He wanted to just keep it there at the dock and keep it snapped up, and it slept for and everything, but he didn't want anybody to come aboard, and it was just, it's a real strange thing. Mm-hmm. Here again, if I could have lived with that man for 6 months or even 3 months or 4 months, I would have found out about these things that were incompatible.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So you don't think it was just the conflict between your union
involvement
and his being a manager?
No, I really don't. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the people in the union were happy about it. They're good. Maybe he'll be a good supervisor now. And I guess a lot of the people in the company thought, well, good, we're going to have good company relations here. You know what I mean?
Well, how was that for you, though, in terms of that kind of conflict over the union
issue? I had no problem.
The union issue?
Never any problem whatsoever. Never. Never did. It's just like when I took the first administrative job, I told them, you know, at the time, I didn't want to go on be an administrator because I said, you know, I operate all these years to that contract, and I will never change. It'll always be that way. So if you, in fact, I didn't take a supervisor's job at first. I took a factory specialist job, I think it was, and which is like a technician's, you know, sort of thing. And then when I finally did take a supervisor's job, they were in bad trouble. They were just developing the DC-8. They needed some administrative people. And a good friend of mine happened to be the director, and he's a good, decent person, so I agreed to take it for him,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I knew I'd have no trouble operating that way. He'd let me go just like I always had operated.
Mm-hmm.
And so it worked out just fine.
So you were able to, but what did it mean in terms of your social life? Because so much of your social life had been wrapped up in the union.
Oh, yes.
How did that affect that part of your life?
You mean when I got married or when I got married?
Yeah.
I would go to the management club affairs, dances and things like that, you know. And Ed never came. He'd come to the picnics and things like that, but he wouldn't come to the meetings, of course,
mm-hmm.
You know, until things got not too good. And then I just dropped out completely from all the management things because I didn't want them. You know, you want to make something work so badly.
Yeah.
He had so many good points that were just beautiful. But unfortunately, there were so many minus ones that I couldn't handle it.
Mm.
And
what position were you in the union at that point when you married?
Recording secretary. No, wait a minute, not then. No, then, let's see. I was in the bargaining committee then. And I was going to run for, vice president, I think that was it. I didn't want to run for president yet, you know, vice president at that
mm-hmm.
time. That was it.
So you were on the bargaining committee
yeah.
and going to run for vice president.
Right.
And then you pretty much pulled back?
I did, because I thought that the marriage was failing. And if it was a conflict, you know, that it's only fair that I should mm-hmm. give the marriage a chance,
mm-hmm.
you know. But
yeah,
that's not it.
Was your father still living with you at that point?
He would, when I married Ed, then he would go and visit the kids. He'd mm-hmm. go and stay a couple of months, 3 or 4 months with one of the sisters and another one, a brother, then mm-hmm. come back, and another sister, then he'd stay with me for a while. But my father was staying with us at the time that he passed away,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he and my dad got along pretty good, excepting that when my father saw how things were, he felt very badly about it because mm-hmm. he thought Ed was a great guy.
Mm-hmm.
It took a long... right. And, you know, my father, it took a long time before my family, because Ed had a terrific Jekyll and Hyde thing. He could be so charming and so beautiful to your face, you know. And for me to tell my sister, like, for instance, things that were happening, you know, how bad they were, and she said, oh, no. I said, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, my father came to visit us last time, you know. He saw what was happening. Couldn't hide it then.
You didn't separate, though. You stayed together.
Oh, I stayed right there. 4.5 years.
4.5 years.
I stayed right in that house, and I tell you, it was living hell. I come home from work and everything else, and I'd do things around, and then I'd go out in the bedroom by myself and close the door. It was really terrible.
Now, were you fighting, or was it... We're not talking.
Well, it was. It got to the point we're not talking.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
And what did you start? What did you do for that whole 4.5 years? And you pulled back on your union company?
Yes, for 4 years. Yes.
Now, did you stay on the bargaining committee though?
I was on the bargaining committee on it. When I finished my contract, I didn't run again.
Oh, when would that have been then? About 54 or something? Well, we'll see. In relationship to that conference, for instance, when would all
yes. After that, right after that.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can tie it into that time. Mm-hmm, right after that.
So from 54 to about 56 or so, you basically were not
that's right.
doing anything in the union.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So
right.
Your life focused mainly around work, and then family.
Right. I really wanted that to work so badly. I really did, because like I say, he had so many pluses.
Mm-hmm.
And
now, at what point then did you, was it after your divorce that you then...
Back in the union again. Oh, yes.
So that would have been about 56?
56.
Uh-huh.
And I was ran for recording secretary then.
So that was your first, the first time you ran for...
Recording secretary. I ran for trustee back in 54, or 50, yeah. By gosh, that's right. No, it had to be just before then. 53, I was trustee. That's the first time the executive board. It was a little before this time. I can't remember the exact dates.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my pins, but I don't think they all have the years on them.